Blog Talk Radio.
Broadcasting from Atlanta, Georgia, this is The Bright Side with Technisha.
A daily broadcast on real life issues that will keep you motivated.
And now, here's your host, Technisha.
Good afternoon, everyone. And thank you for tuning in to another episode of The Bright Side with Technisha. Today is April the 7th, 2014. Fortunately, we do have April showers today. So luckily, we might just be staying in, so do that. And if you have any plans, do that too. But anyhow, I'm thanking you for tuning in with me again. I thank you for yesterday for your calls and liking me on Facebook as always. But anyhow, let's get started. Today online we have Rick Gifford. He has been teaching communication skills to businesses, all different types of people from public relationships and everything for over a decade. And this is very good for people who may have a fear of speaking to other people, don't know how to go about doing it. Of course, I did have another guest who talked about Toastmasters, and you know I'm part of Toastmasters. And if anyone is in the Atlanta area, we are having a meeting April the 12th at Cascade United Methodist Church, which is on 3144 Cascade Road. It will be from 9:30 to 11:30 a.m. So if you want to show up, please do so. It's great. You don't have to speak the first day, but if you choose to, then wonderful. But anyhow, Rick, how are you doing today?
Fantastic. It's a great day today in Santa Barbara.
Oh, is it warm?
Oh, it's getting that way. You know, we're three hours behind, so we got to catch up. So it's okay.
Well, it was doing pretty good, but we just got some showers, and we had showers yesterday, but you know what? It just kills all that pollen, so I'm kind of glad for it anyhow.
Yeah. No allergies today. That's great. Yeah. Well, I can talk about Toastmasters, too, because I'm a Toastmaster for, like, 10 years.
Oh, right.
Great. Yeah, it's been a great experience.
I signed up for Toastmasters in 2009, and it wasn't my intentions to do that. I was working on a project because my major is communication, so I want to be a news reporter. I'm still striving for that today, Rick, to get into the news industry. But anyhow, my professor told me to go out, do some research about communication, other different media outlets and stuff like that. So that's how I got entwined into Toastmasters, and I've been a member ever since. Now, the only problem is I am behind because it took me a while to even start my first speech, and now I'm behind because I'm supposed to be done by now. But in between, you know, you're busy. You have other engagements, so hopefully I will have a speech ready. I don't think I'm going to have one ready on the 12th.
Life goes on, you know.
It does. But what I told her what I might end up doing probably, if I don't have a show, I probably can end up doing my show, do my speech, if that's not against their rules for Toastmasters. Because it's hard. You have to work, and then you got children, and you be looking like, okay, I am going to get to this speech. I'm going to actually do it. And then it gets to the point like, no, I can't do it today. Sorry. It just gets pushed back farther and farther, and I wasn't expecting that. I'm ready to get them all out of the way.
Right. You want to be prepared and confident when you get up there, too.
Exactly. Because, Rick, I don't know if any other Toastmasters never feel that, but even if you are experienced or you have done so many speeches, I still get that little tingle in me like, oh, I got to speak again. Lord, I don't want to do it. And then, especially with the table topics, when they just throw you off and you try to look away like, okay, I don't want to do the table topics. You're trying to come up with a
speech. You know what? You just have fun going in there and whatever comes up, just go for it, be excited. And let it go. That's all you can do.
Exactly. And I try to keep it in mind that these are my friends. And I waitress, too. So I try to think of it like that. Hey, these are people that I waitress. I can flow with. I can talk. And then, like I said on my show, for anybody who does want to do Toastmasters, when you get ready to do your speech, just think of something that you already know. That's the best way to do it. Think of something that you know. Exactly. But enough about Rick and I. So, Rick.
Well, we can go on and on about Toastmasters, too, but just remember that you have things that other people need to hear, too, from your life and your experience. So you are a gift whenever you're speaking. You are that gift.
Thank you. And that's why I wanted to do this show, because there's other people out here who are in the same boat. And, of course, Rick, you speak on and you teach about compassionate communication. Now, this is my first time hearing about compassionate communication. What exactly is that?
Oh, I just talk about it's a deep understanding what another person is experiencing. That's one part of it. And the second part of it is expressing yourself, getting your honesty out and your truth. And people want to hear that instead of going around saying, well, what did they say? They didn't say anything. It's like political. So it's about being honest and getting the point out, too. So that's the other part of it. There's another part where I call it the warm-up skills. You know, before you go out and do a marathon or you play tennis, you warm up your body. And in a way, we want to warm up our minds to get out there, you know, like in Toastmasters, and be ready for whatever we're going to be hearing from the other person. So I like to exercise my brain and give myself the empathy, the understanding that I need before I talk to anybody to prepare myself for whoever I'm going to be talking to.
Mm-hmm. Right. Because, you know, growing up, I was going to say, you know, we always say that contribute to the well-being of us, to connect and communicate with others in loving, compassionate ways. But this is what I want to know. If that's the case, then why is there so much disharmony and conflict?
Well, I think people are not warmed up before they communicate.
Okay.
And so they get out there, they're in the cold, and somebody might be upset or angry or want to, you know, talk about some disrespect. And if I'm not warmed up, I might be just go out there and defend myself and explain why I did something or this or try to help fix somebody. But in a way, what I want to do is just listen to the other person first. Before I express myself, I want to listen and really understand what the other person is talking about and what they're going through.
Yes, and that's the problem. We never let the other person finish. I don't like that when I might be speaking and you cut me off and you're jumping to conclusions and don't know the situation. For instance, it really teed me off when I was at work one day. And, you know, I was talking about the young ladies, how they have to play volleyball. Because I work for the Marriott, and we have been getting so many young ladies coming in with their parents, and they have on the shorts. And in my mind, Rick, yes, I do know that they have to wear these shorts. Yes, I'm not overlooking that. But the problem was, I'm thinking of the way the world is today. And I was talking about, yes, I literally said I will carry a gun because I'm not going to trust anyone with my daughters. It's not like how it used to be with the baby boomers. Your parents, their parents would put them outside and say, don't come back in until dinner time. When I was growing up, it was get in the house before the lights hit, and now it's almost I'm going to be there before these lights hit with my daughters because I'm not trusting anyone to do anything. So I was making my statement, and the guy came through. He works for ballet. He came through. Well, you don't need to let them play volleyball if you don't like that, because that's the way it was. And I was, and he totally took it out of context. I don't know. Maybe in my mind, for a man to be so defensive, I started jumping to conclusions about him. I'm like, okay.
Well, safety is really important to you. Safety for yourself and for your daughters, right?
Exactly. And Rick, another guy did understand that. he said he feels the same way I do, but he does let his daughter play volleyball. And it's, and they're just eight right now. And it's not like I'm not going to let them do it when they get older. I'm just thinking ahead of time. He took it way out of context. And you know, in my mind, being a woman, for a man to get offensive like that, I'm like, okay, why are you getting offensive about something like that? Because
he's doing the fixing. He's trying to fix you. Or he's trying to defend himself before he even listens to what you're wanting.
And then jumped in my conversation. He came way at the end of my conversation. So I'm like, okay, dude, I'm not even talking to you, first of all. So now that relates to what you were saying. We have to let people finish and stop being so argumentative, because instead of accepting my idea, he rejected what I said and just totally threw it off. See, one thing about communication is my manager taught me, you don't throw – everybody's not going to like your opinion or your idea, but you don't just argue with them about it. And that's how I felt like you were attacking me about something. I'm a mom. Of course I'm going to be offensive. I don't even want them – I don't
you
even know if I
heard.
Want
– You want to be understood for your ideas.
Exactly. And that's how I felt. You would not accept my ideas. You totally jumped down. He totally jumped down my throat, Rick. Like, wow, really? And you're a dad, too, so yeah. I really – We was not on the same page that day, but that's all I wanted to say, Rick.
You really want to be heard and understood right now, or in that instance, yes.
And that's what compassionate communication, and I do understand now what you're meaning by compassionate communication.
You see where the focus is. The focus is on you. You're speaking, and I'm listening. Now, eventually, I'll ask you, is there any more you want to say about this? And that opens you up still to talk even more instead of me trying to fix you or defend myself or whatever. Because I might disagree with you. I might say, well, I might have a whole different opinion about shorts and what people wear, but I might agree with you too. I don't know yet until I finish the conversation.
Exactly.
So I want to hear you first. And listen to you, and then, you know, I will express my opinion, but I'll ask you also if I can do that.
Exactly, and that's all I was basically making a point. You know, he didn't have to agree with me, but it's the way he took it, like, in the face he made. I was like, are we really getting upset about this for something that I was not even talking to you about? That's what really got me. I'm like, really? Like how you and I are talking, we're talking calm. And even if you do or disagree, I can accept that. But if you're coming at me in a forceful way, it's like, okay, now I got to defend myself, because you're you're being friendly with this conversation. Yeah, but I do understand.
With compassionate communication, I'm going to just, what I'm doing is empathizing with you. I'm going, trying to understand what you're really wanting and needing before I express my opinion, which might even change while I'm listening to you.
Exactly. And that's okay, because it's a free world. We all have our own opinions, and that's why diversity is so important. And that's what my manager was talking about. You have to respect other people's opinion. Their opinion, well, actually, it will be vice versa. My customer's opinion will be more important than mine, because it's not about my perspective anymore. It's about someone else's perspective. So all that plays a part up under this umbrella of communication. People just fail to realize that. And like you said, some people focus on themselves. They think it's all about them. And I'm not saying my opinion that day, Rick, was right. I'm just speaking from a parent's point of view as being a mother.
Right.
And I have young girls.
I want to hear you. I want to understand where you're coming from before I express myself.
I'm going to play this show.
Yes. it's really important that we stop. And we have a saying, empathy before we express. Before we express ourselves, we want to understand where the other person is coming from first, instead of this fighting, you know, with words, trying to get my word in first. I'm going to sit back and listen to you and understand you, and then I'm going to thank you for being so honest, because empathy, yeah. What I'm doing is I'm empathizing, and that builds trust and honesty with both people. It's really kind of magical, the communication that I'm teaching. And when we're done, even though it might be, you know, a horrible conversation that started, we start in peace. And this is what brings peace to the world, too, and even in a one-on-one conversation with people.
Yes, and I do. I agree with that 100%. And you know we know, Rick, by going through Toastmasters, even going through life, even if you don't do Toastmasters, it's just all part, just the way you were raised. You know, it was always about respect. I'm going to be quiet while you're talking, and when you're finished, then I can talk. So it's all from raisins, too.
Yes, Rick, but we also have to express ourselves if somebody's going to talk over us. We need to bring that up and say, wait, I'm not done with my opinion here. Let me talk for another minute about this. Is that okay? And I'm asking them, is that okay to get my opinion out before you might interrupt me? So it's not about being nice and beautiful and laying down on the floor. It's about being honest and truthful. And sometimes we might want to say something. Like I might say to you, if I was that other man, I'm listening to you, I'm hearing you, and I'm not agreeing with your opinion, but please go on. I want to hear more because I want to understand more.
Mm-hmm.
So it's also, it's also about expressing what's going on for me too. And I might interrupt. You know, if you're going on and on and on, I might say, you know, right now, could I say something about, you know, I have an opinion about this. Would you like to hear it? And so they can say yes or no. It's their choice. But if I say that after 20 minutes of listening to you, I want to get back into the conversation. You know, I want to be heard and listened to also. So it's not just listening. It's also expressing what's going on with me, but in time, in the right time, which is yes.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people do that too, especially when you get upset about something, you want to just go on, but you have to realize maybe that person has something else to do and you don't want to take up all their time. Because I have done that before with my husband. I will get upset about something and I'll go on and I'll be like, wait a minute. And I look at his face like, okay, it's time to talk.
Nice.
Like, you don't keep going on and on.
You want to let the other person come in too. It's a two-way conversation, and you know. And I might go 20 minutes, but I might say, "Well, would you like to tell me what your opinion is? You've been listening to me, and you're understanding me, especially right now. And I'd like to hear your opinion." And that's the beauty when we listen to another person deeply. And that's what we're doing. We're deeply going into what their opinion is. They're going to want to hear more from me, you know, because I've been listening so hard. So if you really want to be heard, listen first.
Yes. Exactly.
Well,
you know, I did a little, I was just browsing, as I always do, researching online, and it was told that there are two languages that I didn't even know nothing about. They call them giraffe and jackal.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And giraffe is the language of request, because as they were saying, by the giraffe having a large heart of any land animal, it's tall enough to look into the future, and it lives its life with gentility and strength. And likewise, giraffe bids us to speak from the heart. And, of course, the jackal and the jackal moves close to the ground. And it made me think about that. I'm like, wow, that's something interesting. I would never have taken language that far.
Yes, Marshall Rosenberg brought this up. He really built this compassionate communication, and a marvelous, marvelous man. He brings out puppets in his workshops. I have puppets too, and I use them in my workshops later in the afternoon, because people aren't ready to see these puppets yet. But when I do bring them out, it's really fun because that giraffe, not only does he have the largest heart of any land animal, but he eats thorns too. The giraffe eats thorns for his food. And to me, that's symbolizing that they're able to hear from another person. They're when they get upset and they get angry and riled up, and I can sit back and listen to them and still give them empathy, still be able to hear where they're coming from and not get ready to fix them and help them. But I want to listen and understand them. It's so important. It's a beautiful purpose, what we're doing.
Okay. And what I like about the fact when you read more into compassion and communication, it's almost like the Dr. Martin Luther King. It's nonviolent. It's not, well, communication is not supposed to be violent at all. So that's what I love about it.
No, it's very, very spiritual because we're connecting with another person. We're also connecting with ourselves because we're able to connect not with the feelings but with our values, with our needs. What am I needing right now? I was needing, before I called you, respect, to be heard, understanding. In fact, there's a list on my website with all these values and needs that you just look at, and it kind of calms you down or gets you energized in a good way. So that's something I want to share with everybody at the end of the show, how to get this free list. It's a beautiful list. I just look at it, and I get energized just by looking at it.
Okay, we definitely going to make sure we get that list.
Yeah, there's a lot at the website. But, you know, right now I want to just talk about compassionate communication because it builds that honesty and that trust with another person so quickly in minutes. And you feel so good when you connect with another person.
Yes, it is. How did you even get into compassionate communication, Rick?
I had no relationships. I mean, I was like dead with communication. You talk about fixing. I was the ultimate fixer. And when Marshall talked about we got to stop that and listen more, it just bonked me on the head and say, this is what I do all the time. I just try to fix people and give them advice and stories, and it wasn't going anywhere. So I learned a whole new way to communicate with another person, and I was going to Marshall Rosenberg's workshops, which I think he retired now, but, you know, I'm giving workshops, and other people are giving workshops around the world. There's a big system now. So that's how we get people into this. We bring them to a workshop and talk to them, and you get hooked. I got hooked. You know, the first time I heard them, I was hooked, even though I didn't want to be. I said, well, this is going to change my whole way of communicating with another person. And it sure did. You know, even my mom, I called my mom when I was first learning this, and she's going on and on about, she lives in Miami Beach, she was telling me that the city council wouldn't listen to her problems. And I go, Mom, you know, I was trying to fix her. Mom, don't worry about that. It's going to be okay. And then I said, oh, let me try this compassionate communication. So I go, Mom, I guess it's frustrating because you want to be heard. And at the end of that sentence, that question, she hung up on me. So I called her back. I go, Mom, you hung up on me. I go, what are you doing that for? She goes, it is a weird feeling. I felt like understood and listened to. I've never felt that before. So that's, my mom really got me into this because it felt so good that I understood where she was coming from.
made me think about my mom because she loves my mom definitely loves to talk, and it's hard to really get a word in. You like, mom, and she'd still be going on, mom. I had to almost literally, mom, I just need to say one thing. And by the time she was quiet, I was like, you know what, this is not going to work. We definitely need that compassionate communication. Cause my mom, she loves to go on. I sometimes find myself like that. I'm like, oh, I'm getting like my mom now. I'm starting to talk a little bit.
Well, you know why that? One of the reasons that people want to go on and on is because they're not listened to. They're not heard. You know, I might be in front of my mother and trying to fix her, but that's them really listening to what she's saying. When I come back, I say, yeah, Mom, you would like more respect, more to be more independent, to have fun. You know, and I do this one time, when I'm speaking to her, I just say one value, because values are very, very powerful. Like I said, they give you an honesty and that trust. And just by saying, yeah, Mom, you want some more respect. And she might even stop. She'll go, yeah, that's what I want. And she'll stop talking. And, you know, it really amuses me to watch this happen now.
I think this would definitely work in the workplace because we need it. We sometimes have an issue with communicating with one another, and that's the problem on my job. We don't tell each other things. For instance, if you know that you're leaving the floor and you're leaving your tables behind, you should always tell somebody that. And that's the main problem that gets me. I will look around, and I'm like, why am I picking up 7 or 8 tables because you won't walk off the floor without telling me that you wanted to go take a break or something like that. So I think it would be definitely effective in the workplace for us. If we're resolving conflict.
Well, that's the other part, is expressing. Now, I'm guessing you're a waitress sometimes. Is that true?
Yes.
Okay. So if I go to another waitress and she's leaving her tables, I would say, you know, we call this oftener. It's observation, feelings, needs, requests. And I would express to her, I would say, you know, I'm looking around, and that's the observation. I'm feeling kind of upset. That's a feeling, because I'm really needing some cooperation. And would you be willing to clean up your tables? Is that something you can do? And now I ask her a question. Now she can come back and express herself why tables aren't cleaned up. But she knows that, you know, I'm expressing, I'm being honest. It's nothing about her. It's about me and my needs. And she'll come back and she says, well, I just need a break right now. I'm feeling bad. And would you help me? She might even ask you for help. Would you help me for 10 minutes? And even that kind of request, you would say maybe yes or no. I don't know. But it's a way that you get out what you want. But you're also telling her that, you know, you're probably hearing some sirens go by in a college town here. But you want to ask her, is this something that you want some help, you know? And maybe she does. Maybe she's not feeling good. She's got the flu or something, and she needs some help. But now you're understanding where she's coming from.
Yes. And that's all it takes. That's why we explain that every day. Just communicate, especially if you know you're having issues into any of your tables. Communicate to the other person, hey, I can't do this. Can you help me out? And that will solve the issue. But that would be awesome to have this in the workplace. I think we need to have a workshop like that. Every job should have one. Conflict.
Well, bring me up to Atlanta. I'll see my best friend, and I'll do a workshop.
Oh, wow.
He lives in Stone Mountain, so. But,
right.
I travel a lot, and I do workshops all over, and it's again, it's the magic of communication. It's what I teach is so magical. It just amazes me what happens to the other people. And to myself, I change. I also change when I hear and understand the other person.
Yeah.
So my advice is to just slow down. Slow down your thinking, your listening skills. Slow them down and just listen to the other person just a little bit longer, as long as you can. And they might even say, what do you think about what I'm saying? You know, so they might even get you in because you've been listening so well.
Mm-hmm. And you don't always have to be the person in charge. You could be from the sideline. And that's something I would like to ask too, Rick. Even if you are on the sideline and not in the position of authority, what are some ways to enhance the quality of empathy around you and in the workplace?
Well, I did this in a hotel. I was in a hotel just having coffee, and we were having a workshop there. And I hear these two people arguing. And my friend, I was just starting with compassionate communication. So my friend said, hey, there's some angry people. Why don't you fix them, quiet them down? I go, well, I'm just starting this. It's kind of new to me. I don't know how this goes yet. So they go, oh, come on, we'll back you up, you know. So I went over there, and I talked to the man. The man was talking to the manager and yelling at her, and they were yelling at each other. And I looked at the man, I go, sir. He goes, he looks at me, he says, I'm in a conversation. I go, yeah, right. But he goes, sir, I'm in a conversation. Leave me alone. I go, well, I guess you just want to be understood right now. He goes, yeah, he just totally calms down. And then I looked at the woman, the manager, and I said, and you want respect right now, too. And it's see how it's a question mark? So you would like respect for what you're going through and trying to help this man. And she goes, yeah, and she calmed down. In about 10 minutes, you know, offering them empathy, and they had no idea who I was. They came to a conclusion and a strategy to help both of them. It was just amazing.
That is amazing.
I'm amazed every time, you know, every time this works, every time I get out of my ego and I go into compassionate communication, it works. It works because both people are heard. That's mediation in a way. But, yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, I was just going to ask or indicate, I just feel like when it's been co-workers and the managers include on the job, when we learn to connect with one another with greater clarity and compassion, both effectiveness and well-being improves because now all of us are listening. And that sometimes just don't happen on my job. But like I said, I will be glad when you do come to the area. We all need to sign up for that.
Yeah. It's fun. It's a fun workshop because I'm a fun person. I like to enjoy myself in this life. So we have a good time. But I talk about my website, but you can go to my website and get links. But mainly, it's looking at this list of values and needs and just using them in your conversation.
Yes, sir.
It took me a long time to get this, but, you know, the way it's taught now is a lot quicker because people want to give each other therapy or whatever they give. And I'm not a therapist. I just listen, you know, and then I express myself. And that's a nice way of just being able to conversate, to have a conversation. It's magical. It really is. And I think you're finding out now how magical it can be.
Oh, yeah. Now, that's the difference between me. I will listen to you as long as I can. But if I give you advice and you fail to want to take the advice, and then when the situation happens again, I'm not going to want to listen to you, then that's when I might suggest you do need to see a psychiatrist. That's the only one who's going to help you. Or God.
Yeah. You know, I don't want to say anything about psychiatrists, but again, I might offer them empathy and try to understand why they didn't try it or do it. So, again, I'm going to empathize. Empathy before education. I want to educate them. I want to empathize. And I empathize as much as I can.
See, Rick, I like you. See, you're good. See, Rick, not going to just brush you off. I'm going to try to help you with this, Rick, and I'll be on the other hand like, somebody please get them some help. See, Rick said he is, well, that's a good man. He's willing to work with you.
Yeah, you know, it's fun watching the magic happen because it doesn't take a long time. It takes one or two words to, like, really change the flow of two people. To really come to peace like it did in a hotel. You know, it took me one sentence, two sentences to change the people, the manager and the customer. And, you know, I could have gone in and tried to fix that, say, hey, you're messing up my conversation with coffee and all that, but I didn't do that. I just went and I changed the flow of conversation. And I just heard what they were going through. And the best part was the man offered me a job, so in his company. And, you know, I said no, but that was pretty cool because he didn't know who I was or my name or anything. But he really loved the respect and understanding that I gave him and to the manager.
Okay. Now, what question, Rick, should you ask to bring a relationship closer, even if it's a marriage or anything?
Well, I'm doing marriage mediation right now. I just changed my practice a little bit. And I say to the person, I go, let me hear what's going on with you, like I'm doing right now. I'm listening to you, Technisha, and I'm understanding you more, and I'm enjoying you more, and we're becoming friends. But I would do some mediation also, and whatever she's going to come up with, I empathize. I don't say you're right or you're wrong, and then I go to the husband, I go, let me hear your story. Because I got her calmed down a little bit, and it doesn't take long to do, and I hear his story. Within 45 minutes, they're a loving couple again, and they're talking, and it's not great talking sometimes, but they're talking to each other, and they ask me, they say, Rick, be quiet. We want to talk to each other for a while, and that's amazing to hear that. That the love has come back. And even though they're having a discussion about something, that love is there again.
See, that makes sense. I love it. Rick, what are some ways we disconnect the relationship?
You connect with them?
Yes, sir.
You know, the best way is just to listen to the other person and listen until you can't do it anymore, until you have to express yourself. And then you ask the person, you know, again, you know, I have an opinion about what you're going through. Would you like to hear that? And the other person who's talking might say yes, or they might say no, but usually they say yes, I would like to hear from you because they've been listened to and, again, understood. It's a pretty simple process, but to get out of your ego, to get out of the ego is not that easy. That's why, you know, I do a lot of workshops, and people come back and back and back, and it happens to me. I go into my ego, and I forget to listen. But then I remember, you know, listen a little bit more, and get out of that ego, then I want to fix them. I want to do this because I'm not a perfect conversationalist. It takes me time to really get into this. I have to give myself, again, a warm-up exercises before I even talk to somebody.
Right. Now, you know, stress plays a part to me in all this, and we handle, to me, as being human beings, we handle stressful situations some days, but because of the tiredness or just too much to do, it can reach some heights that it interferes with the thinking and talking. Now, how do we de-stress instantly, though?
I go into the exercise of self-empathy. I ask myself, I go, what am I needing right now? What would make me happy? And like right now, I would think I would like to go swimming. I would like to swim. Okay? So you just heard me sigh. I just connected with myself and said, wow, that's what I would like. Even though I can't swim, I'm thinking about it, and I'm relaxing a little bit. I might even say, what am I needing now? I'm needing just some relaxation to be listened to be heard about, you know, some of the things I'm going through. So I might call a friend of mine and say, wow, can you listen to me? Don't give me any advice. Just listen to me for about 5 minutes. Can you do that? 15 minutes or 2 minutes. But just listen to me. Don't give me any, don't try to fix me. Just listen. And see what happens. See what happens to your stress. If you're by yourself, I would just do it by myself and say, Rick, you know, wow, what am I, I'm needing some food. I'm hungry. Ah, that would help me. That would get me out of some of my stress. So I'm looking at that list and that values list. I'm saying, boy, what am I needing? I just look down the list and those values just do wonders for me. Even though they're not being satisfied, just connecting with those values gets me out of the stress and relaxing.
Yeah. And then you got to also know what actually made you become stressed. And that's why I will defuse myself from a situation immediately because I don't like to be stressed out. For instance, exactly. For instance, it was a young lady on my dog. Oh, go ahead, Rick.
You have to warm yourself up, get out of that stress, and get to a place where you just even keel, where spiritually you're balanced. And it might take, you know, a couple minutes just to do that and look at that list. I carry that list around with me. And I have it up on my telephone. And when I'm talking to people, I offer them empathy. That turns me around when I go to them or a customer and say, well, are you wanting more respect right now? And they say, yeah, I'm having trouble at work. And then they go on and on because I'm listening to them. But on the other hand, I have to have boundaries too. I say, well, I have to go, let's say I'm a waiter, I have to go to other tables and service them, but is there anything else you want to say? And that's a way of getting back to empathizing and dealing with the stress I might have with too many tables. And I might even tell people, you know, I'm really overworked right now, and I need some patience. That's patience is a huge need that we all have. And just by saying that, and the people hearing that, they calm down. I calm down.
Yes. Now, Rick, you know, I was looking in your book. You have a communication tip, which is the 100, lose the guilt before apologizing. What is that exactly? Would that be if you're feeling guilty about hurting someone's feelings as far as stepping on their toes or feeling something on them?
Well, this is forgiveness, and it's about my forgiveness, too, about me forgiving myself about what I might have said. And sometimes I do that. I step on people's toes, or I'm talking to them. And how I apologize, I use that oftener again. I use the observation might be, well, when I said whatever I said, you know, that you have big feet or something like that, I feel really regretful because I value having a nice conversation and connecting with you with trust, and that just popped out. So I ended with a request. How do you feel about my forgiveness or asking you for forgiveness about this?
Okay.
And that's all I say. That's my instead of just saying, I'm sorry for what I said, that doesn't mean very much. But when I put it in that kind of sentence and putting the values and needs that I was trying to meet but weren't meeting, it goes a different way. It goes a whole different way. So does it make sense? I went through that really quick. That takes a whole day to teach. But I want to say about the values I was trying to meet and the values that were not met for respect, for connection. And instead, maybe I met my needs for fun by saying that, but that's not meeting their needs either. So I want to go back and I want to say I really respect our friendship. And I don't know why that came out and why I said that. So how do you feel about that? Mm-hmm. And then they come back, and they're back in the conversation again.
Yeah.
So they might say, you know, that really hurt, and blah, blah, blah. So I would stay with the empathy, saying, yeah, you were really hurt, and I would like a different way of conversation. And they would say, yeah, and that would just change the whole flow of what we're going through.
Exactly. And sometimes when you get in those situations where you may feel guilty and you have made your amends to me, you don't hold that. Once you have apologized and you have felt that you closed that gap, because some people don't know how to let go of things, you could apologize and they feel like, okay, that's not enough. Then that's when I feel like I'm going to move on with my life. I'm not going to keep dwelling on this negative guilty feeling. Because otherwise, then it's going to lead to me feeling shame and self-loathing. So,
yeah.
I mean, we all...
Well, you want to go on. You want to go on with your life and enjoy yourself. But I might come back with a little bit more empathy, saying, yeah, that was hurtful, and you would like a better conversation. Is that true? And they might say, yeah. And so that empathy goes a long way of listening to the other person. Even in that piece, you know, so and then you might even say, would you like to hear how I feel again about this? That, and I might say, well, I'm enjoying our friendship that we can even talk like this. You know, I made a mistake, but take it back and let's continue our friendship the way we want it to be. And they might say yes or no. We never know what the other, it's a request, so we never know. You know, they might say, no, that really hurt. I just want to be by myself. Or they might say, that's okay. It's over. You know, let's go on. Let's go have a party or something like that. Let's go shopping. So.
Yes.
But you never know. You never know when we talk, when we empathize, when we listen to another person, what's going to come out. They might go deeper and deeper and deeper, too.
Yeah, you know, they always, as you mentioned, I think even in your book, you mentioned earlier, too, about expressing honestly leads to more closeness. But is that for certain? Because, you know, it's going on with you expressing honestly, right?
Yes. You know, whenever I use this type of conversation and communication, compassionate communication, it always goes deeper. That you'll be surprised when you start using this, when you start listening a little bit more, that the other person goes deeper and deeper and deeper, and you wonder, why are they even talking like this? They might not even know me, and they're telling me their darkest secrets because I'm really listening to them. People want to be heard, and they go deeper, and they don't realize it. I mean, people, I've done this for 3 hours once with clients, and because they had so much to talk about, and they went so deep, she said, I don't believe I went so deep with you. And so that's what happens with this. You know, you don't have to say too much, but people just keep going and going and going. So that's where the trust and the honesty comes in by just listening to another person.
Well, sometimes it's hard, especially to me for males, because I think in their mind, most of them think expressing emotion is often viewed as a sign of weakness. And I think that's why most relationships end, because of the inability to actually connect. Or you don't tell your best girlfriend about something that she should have known.
Well, in this conversation, using compassionate communication, the feelings are only 10%. They only make 10% of the connection. Using somebody's values and their needs is 90%. That's why this list is so important. I'm glad you bring this up because, you know, when I'm in a conversation, I don't go for the feelings of another person. I eventually say, oh, so you're really upset about this, you know, go to their feelings. But mainly I'm connecting with their needs. They might say something, I'm going, well, you really want acceptance right now, consideration. I'm using, you know, usually I use one need at a time because our needs are very, very powerful. They tell us so much about a person. I might say, yeah, you're wanting choice right now to be able to choose what you want to do. And now let me tell you what's going on. So again, when you look at the list, it's just, you know, there's so many needs there and values. And when you look at it, you'll say, wow, I have all these needs too. And that's the beauty of this, is that even though we have feelings, our needs are much more powerful because our needs make our feelings. Whether my needs for choice are made, that corresponds to our feelings. So if I'm not having choice in my life, my feelings are going to be negative. If I do have a lot of choice in my life, my feelings are going to be positive. So our needs are very, very powerful in our lives. And we need to meet our needs. That's all there is to it. That's what we're doing all the time.
And as far as it goes with communicating, I just say if you're going to express your feelings, do it in a positive way. That can maintain a real honest relationship. Of course, I need to learn that because it will not come out positive, because I know that some people in my job have, some of them act like the bipolar sometimes, Rick, and I'd be going to tell them, look, you have serious issues. And I just keep it to myself, and I will listen. One thing about me, I will listen. I don't try to go on I will not try to go on one side from the other. I won't agree with you, and I won't agree with the other person, because usually I'm talking to both people, and I'm like, why do you put me in the middle? I don't know how I get in the middle of everybody's stuff, but I guess they think of me as the problem solver. I don't want to be the problem solver, but I will listen. I'll be like, right, okay, right.
Right.
Okay, maybe they shouldn't have went this way about it.
Well,
people
will solve their own problems if you listen to them deeper, because they've been understood again and listened to, and we all know how to solve problems. Pretty much. And when we're listened to and we're heard, the problems just, you know, are solved naturally and quickly. If I've been listened to, you know, what's your opinion? What's going on? How do you feel about this? Because I've been heard, I've been listened to, and I want to hear from the other person. If they're going on and on and on and on, they need to be listened to even more.
Yes. Oh, now, Rick, earlier you mentioned we were talking about a list that you wanted to go over.
Yeah. In fact, I have it right in front of me on my website. And if it, can I give my website out?
Well, go right ahead, Rick. We got a little bit more time.
Yeah. Okay. It's rickgoodfriend.com. It's very easy. It's my name. And just rickgoodfriend.com. And it has this list. It's a values list. It's over on the left side. Just connect to that and just print it out. And put it by your phone. Put it everywhere that you sit and you're talking to somebody. And these are the needs, the values that you want to express or say to the other person as they're talking. And there's many, many needs there, values. And as I'm talking, you know, it's a radio show, so I'm talking a lot. And Technisha, I wonder if you wanted to be heard a little bit more right now.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, you have a TV show. You're on the newscast. You're on newscast sometimes. And you like to be understood and heard when you're expressing yourself. Is that true?
Yes.
Yeah. So this is how I'm doing this. Is I'm asking a question. It's not a statement. I'm not saying, Technisha, you want to be... it sounds like you really want to be heard right now. I don't want to say that. I want to say, are you wanting to be heard and understood? So this is a real way of saying this. And I might use different examples. I might use, so you value communication. You value being heard. Or you want to be heard. There's different ways of saying this. It's like a whole different language when you're learning this. So it takes a while.
Yes, it does. And Rick, I just want to say, it takes a while just to communicate, but I do appreciate you for giving us these tips, and I hope everybody does get your book, which is, as Rick Goodford says, I Hear You But, Effective Communication and Listening Skills, Tips for Improving All Relationships. That's from marriage to boyfriend and girlfriend, your work, even maybe your animals, because we got to include them too. They're human-like as well. So I hope everyone does appreciate this seminar. And he is coming to Georgia. He will be in the Stone Mountain area, so I will keep you posted on that when that does come up. But, Rick, I thank you again for so much for being on this show and giving us your insights on communication today.
Yeah, thank you so much. It was a fast hour. So I really appreciate meeting you and knowing you now.
Oh, thank you, Rick. I'm going to stay in touch with you anyhow.
Okay. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome. Well, we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll be talking to Jennifer Primos, who is the author of The One in the Pocket, and this is also about relationships as well. As far as communications, and this is breaking away from your old habits. So stay tuned. You don't want to miss this.
I'm in almost every school bus and classroom. They see me around the neighborhood, and they tell me that I'm a pretty good kid. Well, I'm one out of every 5 children in America, and I'm struggling with hunger.
Please visit feedingamerica.org today and find your local food bank for ways to help.
Every dollar you donate helps provide 8 meals for kids like me. We are Feeding America, brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
All right, we're back on with the Bright Side with Technisha. Now, we have one wonderful guest named Rick Goodford. Please hear his book, I Hear You, But Effective Communication and Listening Skills, Tips for Improving All Relationships. Oh, by the way, we're doing, one of my good friends, she is doing a Choose Life Scholarship Fund. She needs your support to raise funds for the 4th annual Choose Life Scholarship Fund. It is designed to provide financial support to assist teen parents accomplish their goals and dreams of pursuing higher education. The goal is to raise $10,000. So show your support. Purchase your shirt today. Please contact the organizer with any questions. The website is, of course, you have to put in HTTPS, but it is www.booster.com/ChooseLife Scholarship. So go on there, purchase your shirt today, and let's make a difference. Well, on the line, I have Jennifer Primos. Did I say it correctly, Jennifer?
Yes, you did.
Oh, good. I'll try to make sure I get everyone's name correct. And Jennifer,
that's good.
She is the author of The One in the Pocket. Of course, we're talking about relationships, regardless if it's effective communication. This one is about getting out your old habits. We are stuck sometimes. We like to stick to the same thing over and over. And, my God, I hope certain people are listening, because some people, they like certain things in a relationship. And I think sometimes you could be too picky, or your standards are not high enough. But Jennifer is here to answer all that for you. So how are you doing today, Jennifer?
I'm doing fantastic. Thank you. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. I'm glad we were able to reschedule.
Yes, I'm excited. Thank you so much for having me on the show. I'm truly honored to be with you today.
Thank you. Well, Jennifer, let's get honest now. Relationships are not a fairy tale, and sometimes people walk into these things and they think of Cinderella and Prince Charming and it's supposed to just hit off like that, but that's not the way it is. Relationships.
Absolutely not.
It takes time. You actually have to sit down, people, do your work. You actually have to want to talk. And for you guys, I know that might be hard for you to understand, but you actually have to do some serious talking, not just, oh, hey, babe, what's your name? Let me get your number. All right, I'll check you later. No, we have to work.
That's absolutely right. I got a little bit of your previous guest on the show, and he's absolutely right about communication. But one thing that we have to understand is some of the old things that we try to push away are actually, they hold a lot of truth. We always compare men and women to say, you know, men are from Venus, women are from Mars, or vice versa, apples and oranges and that type of thing. And we have to make sure that we're taking that into account, that we are different. We were created different for a purpose, and so our communication is different. So when it comes to communication, we both have to understand that we're not going to communicate the same. Statistics would show women, of course, we speak about 3,000 words more than men. So for women to beg your men to talk as much as I'm doing, that's a bit unrealistic. Just naturally, men are not created to speak as many words as we speak. Men don't think the way that we think as well. So just knowing those basic facts about men and women will actually help and enhance your communication and your effective communication in relationships.
And as they always say, Jennifer, men hate talking about their feelings. I don't think... And they had a show on Bethany, and they were talking about between men and women who are more dramatic. I would have to agree that women probably are more dramatic because we go through so much. We're not afraid to express our feelings. We will say something on our mind really quick, and we want people to listen. And I see that with the women on my job and as far as with the men, because men, they don't like to get caught up in conversation. They will walk away quickly.
Exactly. They definitely will. And women have to understand that that's not necessarily, or it's not always a bad thing for us to be so emotional. I mean, it's the reason why we were created. We have to have more emotions because we're the only species that will produce more life. And so we need to have all of those different emotions in order to create a well-balanced being. So all of those emotions that we have, our purpose to create the children that we bear, our challenge is managing those emotions. And so when we get out of control, when we mismanage our emotions, then that's when it gets to be too dramatic. We get the highs and the lows and the things that the men love to run from.
And I love with the fact you said with the help of the soap operas in your book, reality television.
Oh, definitely.
All this commentary on unhealthy relationships. And you know what? It does commentate on unhealthy relationships because I have been watching General Hospital, and I am so tired of every time I turn it on, somebody popping out the blue, and I have to ask my husband, who is this? Oh, this is supposed to be someone's child in here. And I'm like, what is really going on in this soap. You got two minutes. We got mobsters. We got people want to kill each other. We have Julian. He used to date one woman. I'm like, I'll be lost in the episode almost. But it does come into an unhealthy relationship because I'll be looking at them on here. I'm like, that is not how I would want my life to be. It's too
definitely.
Much.
It's the fantasy that you talked about at the top of this hour. It's the fantasy that's created, and most people actually take that as a resource to model their own personal lives and relationships. And although my major is in psychology, my minor is in theater, so I'm very passionate about media, very passionate about the arts, and media does have a major role in our decisions in our daily lives. We consider ourselves individuals, or we would like to, but we really don't take into account the subliminal messages that are given to us about our identity, not only as women, but as men, what the definition of beauty is, what success is. You know, some people think if you're skinny, you have long blonde hair, blue eyes, and you drive a Benz, that you're beautiful and successful. And a lot of times that's fed through the media. And it started, I believe, I mean, I'm not as old as a lot of people may feel that I am, but I remember my older aunts sitting around talking about these women, and girl, you know, because you remember she said, and I'm sitting there like, who are they talking about? I don't know these people. And they're talking about soap operas, Young and the Restless, General Hospital, All My Children, and all these things that we're feeding ourselves, and we're not really taking into account that it does have an effect on how we perceive relationships, love, and meaning relationships with other women, relationships with men, and even our relationships on the job. A lot of people now are getting into reality TV, which, you know, I just posted on Twitter last night. I was quite disappointed. I just started watching Married to Medicine. It's a new reality show that's starting, and it's a bunch. It's placed in Atlanta, Georgia, and I spent 13 years there. And it's these very, very prominent, successful African-American doctors, and some of their husbands are doctors as well, and they're doing some great things in medicine, but it's just as catty and dramatic as The Real Housewives and any other reality show. So it makes me wonder about how are we supposed to pull away from these television shows, reality shows, and even some movies with an understanding that this is not the way we want to live our lives, and this is not how we need it to be when we have media telling us, hey, this is reality. This is what really happens. Whether you're married to someone rich or a doctor yourselves, you're going to have drama, and you're basically going to be divorced and married about two or three times by the time you're in your 50s. And it truly is unfortunate, but that's the reality that we're dealing with right now.
It is, and it's sad. I mean, it's the lowest form of entertainment, it's mostly, and it's an insult to our intelligence. But I every now and then I will catch it, but I try not to get caught up in it. Now, one show that I would actually watch is Bad Girls Club, but at the same time, I'm a communication major too, and I do realize that this is just a put-on show.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically, they're doing it for entertainment, and that's basically what it is. And for you to run off, oh, my life has to be like that. Oh, yeah, I have to live just like the basketball wife. No, it's just, I don't know why we have to look, but I think it's just the fascination part. And we just do
it's fascinating. Yeah. You're absolutely right.
I think that's what it is. But, Jennifer, let's talk more about your book, The One in the Pocket. What is this book really all about?
The One in the Pocket. Well, it's actually a bit of my tell-all story, a bit of my reality there. I'm originally from Northern California, but after high school, I graduated and moved to Atlanta to attend college, and I lived there for about 13 years. And so while I was there, of course, attending college, you become a woman, you have all these experiences, and it was time for me to basically spread my wings and experience life as an adult. And so all the things that I was told about how to be a lady, what to accept from a man, what to accept in relationships, honestly, most of it didn't work. I did have a wonderful father who told me that I was beautiful, who gave me everything that I wanted, so I knew not to, you know, look for love in all the wrong places and that type of thing. He was actually a pastor, so I am a PK. I didn't have the desires to just, you know, go run wild and do all of those things. So I thought I was doing everything right, you know, getting my education, staying focused on making sure that I'm becoming a great asset to my community and becoming not just a strong woman but a strong African-American woman. And everything that I was told, everything that I was taught, that I implemented into my relationships with different women, meeting and starting to date men, it seemed like none of it was actually working. I did conceive a child, and I am not with my son's father, and I figured, you know, maybe I'm a failure. What's going on? And that actually initiated me doing some research about relationships. Like I mentioned before, that my major is in psychology, so human behavior, it kind of excites me, wondering why we do the things that we do. How do we say it? You know, what's the difference between, you know, using a softer tone with, you know, a louder tone and all these types of things and how it affects our brain. And after I started doing this research, some years after I graduated from college, I started realizing that a lot of the issues lied within myself. A lot of the issues started with me, with my personal ideas of what should happen, my personal religion, my family dynamic, and all of those type of things. Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, Jennifer, because I didn't want to cut you off, but I was going to say, because I read in the part of the book where you said that you were used to the bad boy and things of that. Yeah, and I get a lot of women who say that. They like the thug. They don't want the kind who got on the suit, because you're just the pretty boy kind. I need somebody who's rough, who knows about the streets, who knows life.
Right. You know, I had all of those we called them church boys before. I had all the good guys before. I had the ones who did everything right, and that wasn't working. So I had to go to the opposite. I had to go to the ones that maybe not went to church. They might got their money a certain type of way that I don't want to discuss, but, hey, they got money. You know, I always tried that, and it was more excitement for me. It was more that edge, that spontaneity that came out of. It took a while to realize that I had to work through what I call our filters, things that get us to the place that we are now, our family, our religion, our culture, our daily practices, even our education and the schools that we attend are our filters. Things that shape our perceptions in relationships. And once I started doing that, after a ton of trial and error, I started realizing that the things that I needed to change had to start with me. And once I started doing that and understanding that, I began to have more successes in relationships, gaining more long-term friends, gaining more security within myself and within my abilities to maintain a successful relationship. And so out of all of that experience and doing more research and interviewing more women, the one in the pocket was actually birth. I started doing a few workshops in Northern California. I just moved back to California, going on 3 years this summer, and with just a lot of women asking me questions as a practicing life coach, the majority of the women were concerned about love and relationships, marriage. You know, I have my education. I have my job. You know, I'm doing everything that I'm supposed to do. I can make my own money and pay my own bills, but now I want somebody to share it with, and I can't find anybody, or they're not looking for me. So we started digging deep into the things that we're stuck in, or what I call our love habits, like you say, the things that we're used to in relationships, always going after the same type of man, like to say swimming in the same sea or the same ocean or fishing in the same pond. But we all understand that the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. So if you don't want to be insane or practice insane tactics or have insane rituals, you have to do something different. And so a lot of times the challenge that we have is just identifying that, understanding what we're doing and our positions in relationships. And a lot of our position is in someone's pocket. So I broke the book down in different pockets. There's the back pocket, which is the most common. That's the best friend that you used to date, but you didn't date, and you just couldn't let him go. He just couldn't let you go, even though you're in a current relationship. You guys have declared that you're just best friends and nothing's going to go on. Now, there's nothing wrong with that, but just understanding the difficulties while you're in the back pocket, somebody that's always reaching back to, you can't move forward if you have the car in reverse all the time. So it's a bit more common because we like to label that as just friends. And it makes it seem a little bit innocent when the underlying truth is there's still an attachment there. There's still an attraction there that either needs to be severed completely or it needs to be explored a little bit more to see if there's actually an opportunity for a long-term relationship. The most difficult and the most dangerous pocket is the front pocket. That's the space where you're close to everything that's valuable to the man. A lot of people are labeled as baby mamas and baby daddies in the front pocket. You got access to his house, access to even his family. You've probably been to, excuse me, a couple of family reunions. You guys date a lot. It almost doesn't count. You're always there. You've been dating for about 5 to 7 years, and there's always some excuse on why you don't want to put a label on it. We have been deceived to believe that a label will change a relationship. When the label has nothing to do with it, actually, I can meet a guy and in 24 hours label him as my boyfriend. It doesn't change who he is. It shouldn't even change how I treat him. It's really just my perception and my expectations. So in the front pocket, we have a lot of expectations that aren't met. Another one that seems to be a bit more fun but is very dangerous as well is called the jacket pocket. Now, the jacket pocket is seasonal. This is the relationship that you guys are together for about 3 months. It's a perfect fit, and then it's just over. No rhyme or reason, no explanation for a few more months. And next thing you know, it's wintertime. It's getting cold outside, so you want to spend more time indoors, and you're back in the jacket pocket. And last but not least, because I always encourage women to encourage our men. I don't do any male bashing at all, is the pocketbook, meaning our purse. A lot of times we go, us women, go shopping for a purse, and we buy a purse or a pocketbook based on our outfit. It matched our shoes, it matched a belt, it matched something, or it had a necessity for one. We needed something to carry our things in, and we get it because it's very cute. It's very attractive to walk around with. But for most of us, we really don't understand the full function of a purse or a pocketbook until we've had it for a while. There's hidden compartments on the inside. There's a zipper that we never paid attention to, or a flap and a Velcro socket on the inside that we never knew was there. And we keep our men in those pocketbooks. And while they're in there, they're just as lost as everything else. Trying to find your lip gloss and it falls at the bottom of the pocketbook and you're digging around between receipts and all this other type of stuff, and it's a bunch of confusion and darkness in there. And we hide our men in there, and we try to force them to understand where they are when we don't understand where they are. So it's a bit of confusion. Men always fight us while they're in the pocketbook. You would understand if you are in a relationship and you have your mate in your pocketbook, if there's a lot of tug and war. You're crying, but you really can't explain why you're crying. He hurt you, but you can't tell him when or why. He's confused and frustrated, and he wants to leave, but you guys just can't seem to let it go. So all of those different pockets are listed in the book, and I actually give my personal experiences about the different experiences I had with men while in the pocket.
Yeah. And then, like you said, we do have to stop the bashing. We got to stop the male basher and the female basher. It becomes, it gets out of line.
Definitely.
It may be inescapable, but just as, you know, some make the jokes about blunt jokes, or we all know they are wrong, but, you know, we still do it. So I would like to know, what's the right approach to take when someone in your presence starts to denigrate men or even women?
Oh, well, my approach, just based on my personality, it really depends on how you are with communication. I'm a more direct and upfront person. So a lot of times I listen to the person, and at first it's always best if you listen first before you react. be proactive instead of reactive. So a lot of times I just listen to see where the conversation is going to go. Sometimes people are just frustrated and they need to vent. But if it gets to the point where they're really just being negative and starting to down a lot of men, especially us women, we're good at that, I stop. And if she's, you know, I'll give an example of one lady that I met. She was wanting to have a counseling session and understand why her relationship, actually her marriage, was going the way that it was. And she mm-hmm. kept talking about all the things that were wrong about him, all the things okay. that she couldn't stand about him and that she was tired of. And she kept grouping it as, well, you know how men are. You know this about men and that about men. And so after she finished and got the majority of it out, I stopped her and I said, well, I hear all of those things that you would like to change about the men. Can you tell me something positive about him? What do you like about the man?
Yeah.
What do you admire about the man? And you've got to kind of, in those type of situations, there's always going to be one person that might be more in control of the conversation, who's talking more, who's giving more information. So once you have that identified on where it's going to go, kind of pull the reins and direct it somewhere else. So most of the time with me, I take, you know, a different approach. Even with my girlfriends, we sitting around and I say, well, girl, tell me something good about him. You're dating him. So there had to be something. Is he cute? What? Okay, so if okay, well, he looked good. Well, let's go down the attributes that he has physically. Okay, does he have a six-pack? Does he keep his hair nice and neat? Does he have clean fingernails? I mean, pulling all of those positive things out of the person will actually help them understand that the things that they're complaining about really don't outweigh the things that they really like, and that's why they're there. Getting people to shift their mind and look more at the positive and the better things about a person versus all the negative things and feeding into all that stuff is actually healthier for us and will eventually allow us to reach our goals in relationships.
Exactly. Reminds me of the movie, Why Did I Get Married, when Janet Jackson told them towards the end of the movie to write down what you like about this person and what you don't like, and then they start writing it down and find out, okay, I might be the one with the problem. This is what I actually do like. So that is very helpful. Find out what you truly like about this person. So, Jennifer, what point of your life did you realize the relationship is not all cookies and cream, though?
It was very early on. It was very early on in my life. It seems that experience has been the best teacher for me. And it's right around that time, around college. I graduated from high school. I was 17 years old. So I was 3,000 miles away from home by myself as a 17-year-old in this big metropolitan city. And I'm from a small suburban city. But in this big metropolitan city with just all these varieties of greatness and all the things that I'm trying to do right. And you know, I'm sitting with, you know, my ankles crossed and doing all this. And it seems like none of this has taken effect. It started actually then. But actually when I started engaging in a relationship and opening myself up to experience what love is and falling in love and all those things we go through as women, I really got slapped hard with reality, that all the things that I dreamed about as a little girl, Barbie and Ken, the perfect, you know, couple, even the Cosby Show, for the most part, that does not happen in real life. Although those are great references to look up to and things to aspire for in love and in marriage, 99.9% of the time, those fairy tales do not happen.
Yeah. And people
and
have to
And it's actually okay. You know, it's not a bad thing to say that there's no hope in love, there's no hope for happiness. It's just understanding what your true happiness is. You know, we always talk about a dime when you talk about a woman. Is she a 10 or is she a 5? And we put these ranks on people.
Yes.
Well,
I mean, do I really want her to be, you want her to be 10 cents?
Really? We talk about that a lot. We put ranks on women, we put ranks on men. But if you're always going after the dime, you're always going after the ones that look this way, you might miss somebody that might be a 7, might be an 8 and a half. You know, I used to tell people, we used to joke all the time, she might not be a dime, but maybe she a nickel and two pennies. It's okay. You know, you can achieve the happiness and the success if you be more realistic with what's out there. And like we talked about before, you being in communications, understanding that what you see on TV is for entertainment. You ever see those celebrity before and after pictures where when they take all the makeup off, the lashes, the hair pieces,
yes,
I mean, even white women, you know, European women, Asian women and Hispanic women are wearing hair pieces as well. They take all those hair pieces off and they get into some sweats and take all that off. They look just as bad as the woman you passed up in the mall. You know, the same thing with men. Before he got that six-pack, he probably had a gut just as big as yours. So, you know, you got to kind of understand that physical things do change. They can change for the better. They can even change for the worse. And so you have to go into it and start understanding these things and reshaping what your priorities are in relationships.
You do. And you're so right about that, Jennifer, because a lot of times, like you said, once they take off all that, they look worse. They look worse than ever. You look like, wow. You can make that back
a lot
off.
Of the times they do. I've been shocked at some of the celebrity pictures. Like, wow, okay.
Yeah, they be looking so good with their makeup on till they tell you, you're like, whoa, that's you. No, you need to put it back on. Don't even worry about it. You
That's absolutely right. And you have to understand that, you know, there's major companies and corporations that's paying for all this. I mean, if they didn't, you know, they didn't have the stresses that you're worried about, if you had somebody to come and do your hair every day, your makeup every day, and give you a massage and tell you not to worry about it and relax, you'll look 10 times better as well. So, you know, it's just the simple things that we tend to ignore, and we try to things in life, and it really messes up our perceptions of what reality truly is.
All the women who go after the man with the buff chest and the biceps, and we overlook the one who might don't have all that but might be a decent man if you give him an opportunity. And I think sometimes, too, Jennifer, we fail to realize that God has the control over this. We're instead of looking for Mr. Right and Miss Right, but we're doing it on our own. We're not asking for the help that God is offering for us. We have to ask to send somebody godly, because they might be godly. They're fine on the outside. And understand this, listeners, that is just the temple. That's just the body that they have taken care of that God has given him or her. That's not theirs permanently, because it's always on. You all that dirt that comes off your body when you're in that tub, it's going to go right back to that same dirt. Understand that that's just the temple that we are protecting. And on the inside, what is on the inside, though, of that person? Are they spiritual enough for you? Because I can look at you all day, okay, point, period, blame, but that goes away when you get older. And it might not go away, but I need someone who's going to be on a spiritual level with me. I don't want to just look at you all day and you're empty up here in the head.
Definitely. And it's actually universal. Like I said before, I'm a PK, so my father was a pastor. I grew up. My mother is a choir director. My grandmother was on the mother's board and usher board and all that. A typical black religious family is what I grew up in. But one thing I had to learn in my adult life as well is that don't let that be your driving force as well. You want to be equally yoked, understanding that if you're Christian and he's Muslim, or, you know, you're Muslim and they're atheist, or you're Buddhist and they're Christian, that you have to understand where you're coming in and you have to have that conversation. But don't let that be your driving force. A lot of times what I've found in the black Christian family is that we always look at somebody in the church and understanding that the devil is in the church as well. And
yeah.
So it doesn't mean just because that you attend the same church and you've known each other growing up that this is a perfect match for you. And a lot of times in our culture, I had this when I was growing up. I remember, I don't even share this in the book, but I remember when I was younger, my grandmother had her friends, and it was this young guy named Travis, and we were around the same age. I think he's only a few months older than me. And they used to tell us when we were little, you and Travis are going to get married when y'all get older. We're like 6 years old, like, ew, okay, that's disgusting. And happened around puberty time, middle school, high school, Travis started looking kind of fine. And I'm like, okay, and Travis looking at Jennifer, and we're like, okay, well, this actually might work, you know, because our grandmothers have said ever since we were little, we grew up together, we went to church together, lived in the same neighborhoods, our families love each other. This will be the perfect match. And in high school, we're already preparing our minds to marry each other. Travis and I never worked out because Travis wasn't the one that God had prepared for me. Travis is not a bad person. Travis is doing very well. We're still friends to this day. Yet, we have to understand that we really did stress out because of the things that we were told by the mothers of the church, because, you know, we're taught that, you know, you obey your elders and the mothers know best because they have wisdom and they understand. And so there was a period of time even before I graduated from high school that I felt like I had to reach this expectation and be this person to prepare myself to marry this man that I knew nothing about. We weren't even adults yet. We didn't know anything about marriage. We didn't even know anything about love. We hadn't even experienced anything like that. But it was shaping our mind and framing us based on what the mothers of the church had said. He went to church, so he was perfect. And in my experiences in relationships, a lot of times, some of the experiences that I've had was with people that might believe in God, believe in the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit, but not even practice as much or be as devoted as I am. And it really gets very sensitive around those areas when you have religious expectations from a person. If you grew up apostolic versus growing up Baptist, if you grew up non-denominational or in a contemporary Christian home and they grew up Baptist, your expectations. You know, I grew up where I went to church 7 days a week. When I lived in Atlanta, I went to church 7 days a week. We had 2 to 3 services on Sunday, corporate prayer on Saturday. We was there all during the week. But I met some people who only went once a week. So does that mean they're not as saved or as devoted as I am? No, it's just that their practices are different. Does that mean that their relationship is shaky? No, it just means that their relationship with God is different than my relationship with God. So these conversations have to happen in relationships, and you're absolutely right. These are things that you have to address and issues that you have to be direct with if you expect to have success in love and in marriage.
Yeah, and I have to get out of that habit, too, just because I don't see people go to church in my neighborhood. That doesn't mean that they're not in the house praising the Lord every day. And we do need to get out of that concept because we don't know what their religion is. And then also to me, too, Jennifer, people got to understand the devil was once an angel when you said that the devil bees in church. And we will ask ourselves, why would the devil want to go to church? And, of course, because the devil has always been religious, saying that his demons are even rather orthodox in some of their beliefs. So,
Oh, definitely. You know, it always says, you know, like the word says, study to show yourself approved. So instead of judging somebody else, you understand it for yourself. Yes, you're absolutely right. Lucifer was an angel. He was actually the most beautiful angel there was. He was over the choir in the holies of holies and took a third with him. So he was attractive. So a lot of the images that we see about this ugly little gimp demon that's red with horns is really not the devil or the representation of the devil that the Bible describes. The Bible describes him as somebody that was attractive and actually convinced a third of heaven to go with him. So a lot of times when we're looking for them, we're trying to use discernment and wisdom in our religious relationships and trying to find marriage within our church or our church community or church family, we kind of have to understand what we're going after. The one that's sitting next to you and that goes to church and is devoted and there every single time you're there, that dedicates his time to the church, that's leading a ministry, that's over the men's ministry, that volunteers every time, doesn't necessarily mean that that's the one that is supposed to be there or that's the one that is meant and have an anointing to be your husband or to guide you in a relationship. He could very well be the one that would take a third with him. So we have to be very, very careful of that and educate ourselves and understand and trust the God that's in us.
Exactly. You have
from
to
a Christian perspective, definitely. And speaking from a Christian's perspective, understanding if we're declaring that we are the righteousness of God and we are created in his image, we have to trust that. A lot of times we get lazy and we want God to do everything for us. We feel like he's a genie. If we have problems, we rub the magic lamp, we shout hallelujah a few times, roll around at the altar snotting and crying, and then we get up and God is going to do it. And a lot of times it don't happen because God is saying, I am in you. And I've already given you all the tools that you need before you even need recognize that you need them. So a lot of times we're saying, well, God is doing something or the devil is busy. It's not that. God is sitting there and saying, you have to go ahead and use what I've already given you. Exhaust your resources that I've always that I've already placed in you. Your gifts will make room for you. So tap into your gifts. How are you going to declare these things and declare in the word of the Lord, and you're quoting all of these scriptures, and you're going out on Facebook rebuking the devil in the name of Jesus, and the devil's sitting there like, God didn't even release me to do nothing. You know, he's sitting back like, what you mad at me for? I didn't even do it. You know, we have to understand our position. We have to understand who we are and whose we are. We have to understand the gifts that God has given us and what room is it going to make for us. And just as important as it is in the world and not being of the world, it's just as important in relationships and not being of all of that. Being in a relationship and understanding that you might be dating somebody right now. You might be dedicated and committed to this person and investing your time and investing your love in this person, but it could just be for only a season. It could just be that you have a purpose in this man's life or this woman's life for only a few years, and this might not be the one that you're going to spend eternity with. So just opening your mind and opening your heart and understanding just the basics that we all know, we just really allow life us forget or help us ignore those facts.
Why? I do. I agree with that 100%. And as you said before, you have to stay on your P's and Q's because the devil will attack you, as Timothy 2, chapter 3, verse 5. Timothy 2, chapter 3, verse 5 says, the word says concerning dead worship by dead churches and believers having a form of godliness but denying its power. And that's one, it had nothing to do with them. That's one thing. The devil goes to church because he's looking for prey. So just be mindful of that. While you're searching for that person, the devil, he's looking for you too at the same time. And as we kind of were speaking on that, Jennifer, you just pray about it, because we always searching and looking. You looking in the church, that could be the wrong place. We look in the clubs, definitely the wrong place. I don't
definitely
think that's
the wrong place. Definitely the wrong place.
Jennifer, let me ask, what do you really think about this online dating? Because there are so many sites, and I hear people say, oh, I found this person, but at the same time, you got to be careful of that too, because I don't know if you're the next Jeffrey Dahmer on there or not.
Oh, that's absolutely true. But this subject comes up a lot in my workshops about online dating. And I'm not opposed to it, but I believe we need to use the same cautions that we use when we meet a person. I mean, you can meet a person in the store. Just because you saw him face-to-face don't mean you're going to get in the car with him and drive home. You know, just because you see him at the coffee shop doesn't mean that you're going to give him all of your personal information and tell him about your family and tell him where you live. So the same thing with online dating. Now, the times have changed, where our society has become more about electronics and the internet. So I'm not opposed to online dating. I believe now, because there are a lot of things going on with different professionals that travel a lot, people don't have time to go to mixers and that type of thing, that they have found a convenience in it. But you're absolutely right that it could be somebody crazy, and you have to understand to use discernment, use your wisdom, use your knowledge and your understanding. But just because they, you know, you see a picture on there doesn't mean that that's the person that you're talking to. There's a reality show called Catfish now where they're actually helping people that have fallen in love on the internet, and now they have to find out that the person they were talking to over a span of months and even some years, that it's not the right person. So I say with online dating, I think that it's okay if you are mature enough and understanding the right things to do on the internet. You have to understand this is the World Wide Web. So there's people across the globe that can access you right while you're in your living room and in the safety of your own home. So understanding that it is a generational gap as well. Of course, some of the older generations are completely opposed to it. Well, that's because they weren't raised, you know, with these instruments in their homes. But there are adults who are adults now that don't know a life without a computer. I'm kind of on the in-between. I'm an 80s baby, so I remember when the internet first got popular and came into the home. But I do remember there was a time before it happened, so I'm kind of on the in-between. So there are some adults, people who are in their late 20s, entering into their 30s, that don't remember not having a computer, not having an answering machine, or not having a phone, not having a cordless phone. I remember when cordless phones first became popular. You know, those simple things that actually change our perceptions. So like I said, I don't totally oppose to online dating, but I am opposed to any type of dating where you're not using your wisdom and understanding that there are predators out there who prey on people who are too open too soon, who are too trusting too soon, and who are too lazy to put in the work to actually do the research, find out who their family is. I mean, and not even in a dangerous setting, because you can get into some dangerous situations, but I have had some clients who have actually dated family members because they didn't do the research. They met in person. This actually happened around January. This young lady met this young man at a party at someone's house. It was a nice mixer, a bunch of professionals. So she was secure in meeting these men, knew that most of these men were educated and had jobs. And she felt safe because it was at a friend's home. And they really were attracted to each other, and they sat down and they talked to each other and shared their names and all the basics that they would do. And she got excited and exchanged phone numbers with this man. And they talked for a few weeks, went on their first date, and had a great time. It wasn't until their fifth date where he actually invited her to his family reunion or family dinner. I don't think it was a reunion, but it was like a Sunday dinner or something. And she pulled up and noticed that she saw one of her cousins there. And then she saw one of her aunts there, and she's wondering, oh, well, you guys must know the same people because we grew up in the same city. Yeah. Well, come to find out, it's actually her cousin. He had lived in another state, and they hadn't seen each other since they were about 5 years old because they come from two large families. And they didn't share with me if anything physical had been exchanged, but stretching my imagination, I can only imagine the horror she felt after she had these type of feelings with someone that she was related to. And it's only because she didn't do enough research to find out, you know, where are you from? What about your parents? What do your parents do? Where are your parents from? What side of town did you grow up on? If she would have did that little bit of research, she would have been like, okay, wait, that's a little too familiar. You know, I grew up around here. You know, who's your aunt? Who's your cousins? Who, you know, ask those type of questions. And so when you're online, when you meet in person, it is vital to do your research. Now, most women, you know, we have our checklist. We go down the list. Do you do this? Yes, no, check, no. And we basically interview people. And I'm not saying that. I'm saying find the right time and the place to ask certain questions. And don't be afraid to do so, because you can save yourself a lot of heartache and headache if you take the time to do it.
Yeah, because I remember an article that Good Morning America had out. That was a 2007. This man, he pretended to be everything from a country music manager to a Pentagon consultant, and he was on the Christian dating site. And the woman came to phone. He was seeing 60 other women from 25 different websites, and she claimed he stole like $1,000 from his victims and everything. So, hey, you gotta be careful. Christian mingle, all these other Baptist mingle, and no. Don't, just because they got a religion in front of them, don't make them right.
That's absolutely right. There are definitely one other thing we need to understand, that a lot of these dating services and dating sites and products, just because it says Christian does not mean the founders are actually Christians or sharing the same Christian principles that you share. These are corporations looking to make money. So just because it says it's Christian something, ChristianMeetup.com, don't expect that everybody there is going to be the same type of Christian or even a Christian that you are.
Exactly. Now, Jennifer, I would definitely love to get into talking about women's empowerment, because that's what you usually speak at most seminars. You try to get women to know that they are powerful human beings, because we have been labeled as to be dumbfounded. We're less than a man. We don't equal to a man in the workforce.
Oh, definitely. That's really where my passion is. I attended Spelman College But it didn't really start there. I come from a very large family. My grandmother had 14 children, my mother being the baby. She had 12 girls and only 2 boys. So women and strong women and sisterhood was embedded in me since even before I was born. But as I got older and attended a college where it's predominantly black, well, most of us, there are a few that are other or consider themselves to be another race, and only for women, it really was embedded in me the importance of sisterhood, importance of understanding who you are as a woman. And because I speak in different states and across the U.S., I encounter more than just black women. So no matter what your race, your color, your creed, or even your religion is, the thing that we have in common is that we are women, and we have to understand how powerful we are with just what we have. Like we talked about at the top of the hour about our emotions, understanding that being emotional is not a bad thing. Crying is not a bad thing. We were fearfully and wonderfully made in God's image, and we were created this special because we are the beings that brings life into this world. And if we understand and tell ourselves that first, we can have a different perspective about why we process information the way that we do. We have to have all those emotions so we can have a well-balanced child. We can't be black and white like most men, because if we're just black and white, we'll have black and white kids. We have to be colorful and bring these beautiful children into the world that are creative. We are very sympathetic. We are very nurturing. And all these things that we are facts about us, not perceptions. And we have to understand the difference between that. You know, just saying you're a nice person, or I love your show because you're very friendly, those are characteristics and perceptions that I have based on how we interact with each other. But the fact is that you are strong because you are a woman. Childbirth is the closest to death a human being can get to, and we can make it through there with no problem. Some women do it more than one time. My grandma did it 14 times. So we are very strong, and we have to understand just how powerful we are. We have to understand just how beautiful we are, and then we have to get more personal and intimate with ourselves and find our personal gifts. What are we good at? And a lot of women don't understand that. They don't know what they're good at because they're used to somebody telling them something. They believe that they're beautiful because somebody told them they were beautiful.
Yeah.
But you have to sit down and take the time for yourself to understand what your personal gifts are. I had a few young women come to me and say, well, I'm not good at anything. I said, well, what do you do all the time? Well, I babysit my younger brothers and sisters, and I keep the house clean. I said, well, you might be an awesome child care provider. You might be an awesome cleaner or organizer one day. These are careers that people have made six-figure incomes doing that you do naturally. Those are your gifts. It's the things that God has given you that come naturally to you that you don't have to go to school to know how to do. You might be great at doing some things like communicating. Oh, I'm a talker. Oh, she talked too much. Well, she's an awesome communicator. She has a very vast vocabulary. It's really finding the right way to look at the things that we feel are wrong in our lives. It's shifting our minds to the positive and uplifting ourselves before we can uplift each other. Before you can help somebody else, you have to learn how to help yourself. You know, a lot of times we're deceived to believe if we constantly give, that that's the best thing to do in life. But some of those things are meant just for you. And so what I'm passionate about and what drives me is helping women understand the greatness they have within themselves, the awesomeness and the gift that they have within themselves, and then sharing that with their sisters. And pretty soon, you know us, we get to talking, and so we have things in common. I love media, you and communications. And then you start sharing things and encouraging each other. And that's how the empowerment starts, where we can actually uplift each other. But it first starts with us.
It does, and there's so many women in the world, thousands of us, who has this power. Look at Oprah Winfrey, and I think they just mentioned about a woman named Tina Brown. She's in her 60s. She's a famous editor, and she's making herself over as a global women's leader and a self-named brand. And they say she's going to be taking her show to Chicago, Los Angeles, Washington, D.C., everywhere. Women are making a stand. And like you said years ago, women they bear so many children. That was powerful then. It's just that we didn't have the same rights as men. We couldn't vote. They didn't want us to be in the workforce. And then if you was a black woman, you definitely was penalized out. But we have been struggling as women forever, not even just the fact of being a black woman, but women everywhere. We've been struggling to just equalize to a man for the longest. So we are here today, Jennifer and I, to tell you, you are a strong woman today, and it's time to stand up for your rights. Do not let a man define you of those rights. And you already know that you're a beautiful woman. You don't have to have, like you said, you don't have to have nobody tell you that. I don't need you to tell me that. I can't stand when they tell me that. I'll be like, I already know that. Tell me something else.
Exactly. Exactly. That's exactly right. Women understanding that. I believe our self-esteem is just that. It's our self-esteem. We say women have low self-esteem, and it's really because they haven't taken the time to look at themselves. They're constantly looking at someone else. They're looking at a magnifying glass versus looking in a mirror. A magnifying glass, you'll put something in front of you, and it looks bigger than what it really is. So you'll look at the next person. You'll look at the next woman, and you look at all these things that she has and thinks that it's so much better than what you have. Versus turning it around and look at the mirror and pick out all the great things about yourselves. And definitely with the culture of minorities, African Americans and even Hispanics, it's very difficult for us. It's been embedded into our culture and our history to down ourselves and to push ourselves down and to think that we're less than anything else. And the only way that we can stop that and break the cycle and break all the chains literally is to start with ourselves and say, no, enough is enough. Yes, I may need to lose weight. Yes, I may have acne problems. Yes, I may have these things that are going on in my body, but I love this about me. I am this great woman. I am strong. I've made it to see the age of 55 years old, and I'm still here. I've made it to see the age of 27, and I haven't had a child yet. Or I'm 60, going back to college and getting my degree that I never got. Feeding that to yourself every single day, it's very difficult for minorities to do that and understand that it's okay to get counseling, to find someone to help you do that. That's what got me to being a life coach. It's just being a tool to help somebody navigate through life versus trying to dictate to somebody any illness that they have or any wrongdoing they have. But help somebody sit down and map out where they want to go and the tools that they already have with themselves. And what helps me the most and what brings me the most joy is when someone looks at me with a new light about themselves and say, you know, I never knew that about me. And I could just meet them. And I said, I didn't know this. You've been living with you all your life. And now you're sitting here acknowledging things that you've had all this time, but because of all of our filters and experiences and the things that we listen and accept it from other people, we kind of cover them up and we hid them. And so I'm just ready to see a lot of people burst wide open with greatness, especially us women, and step into the greatness and the relationships and the love that we definitely deserve in life.
Yes. And that's what, and I agree with you 100% all the way. And sometimes, and that brings me to the point where women who feel that they are strong-minded and have a nice job, there are some men who might be scared of that. But there are men out there who are willing to work with you and deal with that relationship. I just consider those the weak ones. Oh, she made more money than I do. Well, so be it. So what if she does?
It's become more in contemporary relationships. Some of the I call old school tactics is what I love. Understanding your place in a relationship. Just because you make the most money does not change your position in the relationship. There's a lot of domesticated men who stay home and take care of the children and clean the house. A marriage is a partnership. If this person is your life partner, it's like a team. And I tell men all the time because they're the ones that have the most issues with that. It's just like your teammate. Whether it's football, basketball, hockey, soccer, even baseball, whatever it is, your wife is your teammate. You play your position and you play your position well. Me in particular, I love basketball. So if you're the point guard, if you're the shooting forward, or if you're the center, it doesn't matter what your position is. You guys need each other to get the goal. And so whether she's the breadwinner or bringing the money into the home, that's her position in the relationship at this time. So as long as she's playing her position well, with honor, with dignity, and supporting you in your position, there should not be a problem. Now, if you want to switch roles, then you have to do something to do it. If it's a problem for you and you don't like that, then you have to discuss that with your wife and say, well, hey, babe, I don't want you to make as much money as you're making with your master's and your doctorate degree. I want to do that. You might have to meet her or beat her to get it done. So if it's a problem, a lot of times I see that some men use that as an excuse in a relationship, and there's an underlying issue. The intimidation may come from their lack of self-esteem and understanding that there is more that they need to do in life. Some men need to go and get, you know, more education to do it. Or what happened, you know, in the relationship. Some men might lose their jobs, and that's really the issue, that they lost their job and they're grieving that loss, versus the issue really being that she makes more money than me. But on the other end with women, if that is your position, making sure that you support your husband in his position. In marriage, you have to understand that even the little things with men have to be celebrated. If a man is the homemaker and he's cooking, you tell him that the food tastes good. You tell him that the way he vacuumed that floor is the best way you've ever seen it in life. And celebrate even the small things to allow him to feel like the king in his house. And in return, if he's the right one, he should celebrate you the same as the queen of the house.
Yeah. Well, Jennifer, I do appreciate this insight on this, because a lot of people need that guidance. They need to know that it's hope out there. It's hope to find a relationship. We also discussed about women. You are very powerful, so I hope everyone picks up this book today, The One in the Pocket. It's about you too, guys. It's based on you, because in order for this to work, a man has to understand what's actually going on and quit being a peanut out there. We don't need you just for that too that you think we need you for. We need you for more than that. But
definitely.
Jennifer, please tell the listeners how they can go about getting your book.
My book now is available online at Amazon.com, also createspace.com. It's available internationally. So no matter where you are, you can just Google it, The One in the Pocket. It's available now. I know Amazon has it on sale. You can get it on Kindle as well for 50% off. If you forget any of that, you can log on to my website, MizJ, MIZJ, online.com. I'm also on Facebook. I'm on Twitter. I'm on Instagram and all that great stuff. So definitely get with Ms. Day. She has my contact information. We're connected through Facebook and online. So no matter where you are in the world, you can get The One in the Pocket online. And thank you so much for having me today.
Oh, you're welcome, Jennifer. And as Jennifer says, it's time to detox yourself and stop being the one in the pocket. It's time to just get rid of them old habits. But thank you again, Jennifer, and you have a blessed one.
You do as well. It's been an honor and a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. As Karen Hawkins, who is the author of How to Abduct a Highland Lord, as she says, I often thought it unfair that women are expected to stay at home when there's a fight to be won. If a woman has the strength to bear a child, she could swing a sword as well as any man. So women, as Jennifer and I said, it's time to stand up. Enough with this. We are strong, too. But coming up for another guest, yes, I have three. This is the third guest today. His name is Hillis Pugh. He is a published author, and the topic today will be about gratitude and affirmations that he also talks about in his blog and book titled Thank You Thursdays. And we will be talking how taking small moments in each day to have an appreciation for the smallest thing change your life. So stay tuned for that, and we're going to take a short break, and we'll be back.
It takes 12 years to create a graduate. It takes about the same time to create a dropout. And at the end of the day, the difference between a child becoming one or the other could be you. So United Way is asking you to make a pledge. Tutor a child who needs help. Mentor a kid who needs someone on their side. Volunteer to read to children. Because when a child advances, we all advance. Be a reader, tutor, or mentor. Give. Advocate. Volunteer. Live United. Take the pledge now at liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
This is the sound of a flat-screen television hurled off a building. Now the new bike your kid wants. These are the things you could have all cast into oblivion. Because when you throw away money on wasted electricity, you throw away everything you could have bought with it. Use Energy Star light bulbs and appliances, and you could save hundreds of dollars a year. Saving energy saves you money. Learn more at EnergySavers.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Energy and the Ad Council.
All right, we're back on the line. This is the third guest. I know. I told you my show is spontaneous. You never know what could happen. But this is Mr. Hillis Pug. Did I say it correctly, Hillis? I made sure I tried to pronounce everybody's name right.
No, actually it's Pew.
Pew. Hillis Pew. Yeah. So there we go. We got it right. We don't want to mess up a man's name. As I said, he is a published author, and his book is titled Thank You Thursdays. And this is all about just having appreciation for the smallest things in life, which we fail to sometimes do. We always focus on the big things, and that's a problem because God doesn't focus on the big things because we are the small things, and that's what he focuses on, us. This is the big world he has in his hand. So, Mr. Pugh, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you doing today?
I'm doing wonderful. I'm glad that we were able to get this in. I know all of our schedules are busy, so I'm glad that we were able to connect and get you scheduled in today. I know most of my guests are used to my show being over at 1, but that's why I told you, this is a spontaneous show. It doesn't work like that. It doesn't work like that. This is Technisha's show. See, you never know. And eventually I'm going to be stepping outside the box where I'll be covering other people's events. So the shows that you do on the actual radio station, I will be doing just like them one day. So that's why I tell people, never expect the unexpected. You have to expect the unexpected with me. So anyway,
yes,
Mr. Peter, give us a little more details about what it is that you do.
Well, other than my writing, I am also in publishing as well. Looking for authors who want to have their books published. So me and my partner, we're looking for smaller authors that want to get their word out. And it's like, hey, I have a book. I want to let people know about what it is that I do, along with me also being a publisher and writer. I'm also an entrepreneur and work on various other projects throughout the year with my partners, with my friends and sometimes family, just to help them with their ideas, because I know how it is when you're first starting out. You need somebody to help guide you through the process of, okay, what do I do now? So it's like a mentoring process that I help with other people as well.
And see, that's a great start, because unfortunately, like me, I'm trying to get my show built up. I've been doing it since February, but it's not an easy task, but I just keep going and going so I can build up my brand and everyone will finally know who Technisha is.
Yes, and sometimes you do have to do that. You have to let people know. It's like, hey, I'm here, I matter, I'm important.
Now, also, Till, as you talk about gratitude in your blog and in your writings, what does gratitude mean to you?
Gratitude for me is showing the appreciation for what we have in our life, no matter how small, no matter how large, just taking that moment and saying thank you for whatever it is that we feel grateful for in our life.
Okay. Now, with this book, Thank You Thursdays, I love it. How did the writing start for it?
The book initially started out as a blog back in 2008, and in 2008, you know, that was the time where everything kind of manifested into the blog form. And on Thanksgiving, which was the, you know, the day that I actually started, it was in 2008 on Thanksgiving Day. And, you know, usually, you know, I'd go over to the family's house the day prior to the Thanksgiving and help them prepare the Thanksgiving feast, everything from desserts to the main course. And I woke up Thanksgiving morning feeling very grateful because I've just come out of a very rough patch in my life.
Yes.
And with me coming out of that rough patch, it's like, you know, I have to take this time just to give myself love and express it to my friends and family who helped me this past year. So with that, I took a small email, sent it to friends and family, and the response and the feedback was overwhelming. It's, you know, this is a good idea. I should start writing about this and letting other people know that you don't have to take one day to be thankful. You can do it every day. And so with that, Thank You Thursday was born just out of that one thought.
Okay. Because I read that you wasn't always feeling or you haven't lived your highest path, and you had to alter your own self-belief, right?
Yes. And with that, with any situation that we experience in our life, we do have moments where we go through a rough patch and we feel defeated and we don't honor our full self and we don't honor ourselves, we get to a point where it's like, you know, what do I do now? You know, we do things that out of being desperate. So when you have that desperate energy, anything could happen. And so we don't live up to our higher self until we get to a point where you say, well, enough is enough, I'm done. And then you say, open yourself up to higher possibilities.
Yeah, and I do like that, when you said that enough is enough, I'm done, but it's not enough and you don't want to be done because God haven't given up on us. And you do. You have to, with all the shows that we've been talking about, God always plays a part in everything, and he plays a part in this because to become one with yourself, you have to have a true, pure heart with God. You have to be cleansed, your mind, everything. But this is what I would like to know, Hill, is how did the topic even come up for, well, the title of the book, Thank You Thursday?
Well, the title of the book, as I mentioned before, I sent my first email out on Thanksgiving Day. And in America, you know, so usually Thanksgiving is held on a Thursday. And me being a lover of alliteration, which is poetry, I love all types of poetry, and alliteration is one of my favorite forms to write in. And what better way to have Thank You Thursday, you know, and then Thanksgiving, and then on the Thursday, it's like it came to me, Thank You Thursday.
I like that, because you always say Thank You Fridays, but Thank You Thursday. Okay. Can you tell us about some of the topics of your book?
Well, one of my favorite topics of the book is called Persistence of Inspiration. And that topic lends to that little nagging voice that we hear in our head. And that little nagging voice is our guide to help us on our venture, on our path, and what we're supposed to do. And sometimes we don't listen to that nagging voice. Sometimes we go against it. We listen to the mind and not the inner self, the voice. It's like, you should do this or you shouldn't do this. It's our intuition that we should listen to help guide us on the path that we are meant to go to. And it just helps to clarify and to help validate others who have experienced that situation to where they don't know what to do, and to help give them strength. Like, well, you know what? I'm going to stop and I'm going to listen to what my voice and my guide has to say to me, which is what I'm supposed to be doing.
Okay. Now, what is the reason for writing Thank You Thursday, basically?
Now, the reason for writing Thank You Thursday started out as therapy for myself. Therapy and allowing myself to be grateful for even the smallest things, such as waking up in the morning, you know, having the ability to walk and talk, and just having the stillness and the quietness of the day to say, you know, I have everything I need, and I'm fully supported in what it is that I'm doing. Regardless of what anyone else thinks, I am loved, and that's all that matters. And
yeah,
when you get to that point, so you say that everything that's all that matters, you begin to express more self-love and more appreciation, more gratitude for what it is that is coming into your life.
Okay. So basically with the self-love, you're just learning to love basically yourself more with a projection to higher self-esteem, Hillis, if I'm getting it correct? Okay.
Yes, and when you love yourself more, you're able to love others more and just the same as you love yourself.
Yeah, and you can, well, and you can express that experience with someone else. I think the self-esteem is a fundamental power that we have. It's a basic need. It's just like food. You need it. You feel a sense of peace and harmony within yourself when you have this.
Exactly. Yep.
So what would you say is your source of inspiration?
My source of inspiration is definitely everyday life. I mean, everyday life, because you can walk down the street and see a homeless person on the street and be inspired to help them. And for me, one of my moments when I came to that realization that I can help anyone with whatever it is that I have, I was working in retail at the time, working a part-time job and a full-time job at the same time, working 6 days a week. And this lady walked up to me and said, "Can you help me buy some food? I'm really hungry. I don't have any money. Can you help me?" And I looked at my watch. And I was like, "Oh, I have about half an hour I can spare." So I walk into my building, take her to the food court. I said, "Get whatever it is you want and keep the change." Yeah. So it's moments like that where you come to, like, I get it. I understand it now. And no one else out here has to be alone in their struggles. You can help them understand through your actions and through your words that you do matter.
Mhm. Yeah, I do like that. Sometimes we don't like to take out the time to do things, but you never know who God might send in your path, and you could just have rejected that opportunity, and you did not reject the opportunity. Who knows what that lady could have been? He could have sent her in your path for anything, but I'm glad you did take out the opportunity to do that for her.
Yes, because like you said, you never know when the opportunity is going to present itself to make a difference in someone else's life. Even though past experiences may have jaded you to the point where you don't want to help anyone else, but going back to that nagging voice, like, this is the person that you're meant to help. You have to help this person. And when you take that action, it does inspire that person you're helping, and it inspires you to do more.
Mm-hmm. Now, since we're speaking on all this, what encouraged you to actually want to start writing the blog?
What encouraged me was the fact that I was always a writer and was writing since high school, everything from science fiction, horror, and my first love, which is poetry. So I was always inspired to write. And my main purpose for writing, especially my poetry, was to let people know that they're not alone, that they don't have to experience whatever situation is in their life alone. Because growing up as a teenager, sometimes, you know, you feel that no one in the world understands what you're going through. And carrying that energy into my teenagers, into my early adulthood life, finding out that other people do feel the same way that I feel. And I took that energy and turned it into a message that everyone else can understand and let them know that they are not alone experiencing this thing called life.
Now, have you always, during your high school time, have you always written about gratitude?
No, I haven't always written about gratitude. I've, like I say, my first love is poetry, and I've written everything from romance to my personal insight and how I view the world through my poetry, as well as way back when I was a child, wrote about science fiction. So it's just natural for me to express myself in different ways and in different writings. But gratitude for me, writing about gratitude has come up for me as a way of therapy to heal myself through the rough patches that I had in my life, as well as my poetry. So it's kind of cathartic, you know, therapy, just healing overall.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that you're very insightful. I think that's something that we need to pass on to our children about gratitude, because we lose that. Even for adults, we lose that. And I don't know where we lose it at, because our waitress and my coworker and I was talking about that. Where do we forget to say please and thank you at, to show somebody you really care? We just call out stuff. Oh, I need. Oh, really? You need? Okay, well, I need to win the lottery, but I haven't won that yet.
And it's interesting that you say that.
They do. They forget how to say please and thank you. Just the common courtesy matters that I was brought up on, and I'm sure you were brought up on to say. But a lot of people forget that, so I think all that's part of gratitude as well.
Yes, and saying, just having manners definitely is a big part of it. But as you get older and then you go through situations and you become jaded and you cut yourself off, you tend to forget the smallest things, such as saying thank you. Sometimes that's enough. Sometimes that's all a person needs to hear is saying thank you, and that's acknowledging them that you appreciate what it is they've done, what it is that they've said, whatever it is that they've done to validate you as a person and your action. And going back to what you said previously about where do the younger generation, where do they forget it? Sometimes it can be through watching adults around them, because I know as a child, that's what I did. I watched my family, and I watched other adults around me and how they acted. And I was like, oh, well, this is the way where you have to act. So it's not always necessarily the children. It also could be the parents, but sometimes the children can act upon their peers. It's like, well, I don't have to do this. I don't have to do that. I'm entitled. I deserve this. But if you feel that you are entitled to something without showing appreciation for it before it comes to you, then it's never going to happen.
That's so true. Now, looking at some of the topics in your book, how do these topics come about? Acceptance, phases, energy, little things. How did you compile all these? How you compile all these topics into this book?
The topics, that's a really good question. They usually just came to me on a weekly basis. Sometimes I do consider myself in a channel or automatic writer. And what that means is you open yourself up to receiving messages from God, from the universe. It's like, hey, somebody needs this message. And even though I may not feel someone needs this message, well, even though I may feel that this message doesn't mean anything to me personally, but once I write it, once I send it where it needs to go, someone in the universe, in the world, is going to pick up and say, hey, this is what I really needed to hear today to pick up my day. And the topics, you know, such as acceptance and energy and phases, those all have to deal with different aspects of our life, how we are in day-to-day. And our energy that we express is a phase of what we go through. And that our energy carries into every action, every thought, every process manifests itself.
Yes. It's an insightful book, and I mean, it's so much to relearn. In the book, it really makes you focus on, like you were saying, the small things in life that we sometimes choose to overlook. Do you feel you have grown as a writer, though?
Oh, yes, definitely. From 2008, which I initially started the blog, into now 5 years later. Wow, definitely is growing a lot because I can see it in my writing. And generally, as a poet, I don't like to read anything that I've previously written, you know, some years ago. But with Thank You Thursday, I am reminded of how much growth and how much I allow myself to be an open channel to receive these messages for others to deliver them. And
right.
It just makes a difference, everything from the words I use to the length of the entry to the depth in which it goes to help others.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, what would you like our audience to most know about you, though, Hillis?
Well, one thing that I am definitely working on right now, actually two things I'm working on right now, since it is National Poetry Month, the month of April, I am posting new and old poetry every day for the month of April, because this is my first month. I have to share my insights, my love with everyone else. And there's one other thing that I am working on as well is a new book project, which is called the World's Appreciation Book. And what that is, it's a collaboration of different authors from across the world submitting stories of appreciation moments of their life, like, you know, I have the most appreciation when this happened. So I just feel that, you know, just raising the vibration, raising the energy of sharing stories with each other. It's like, I feel this good when, or I appreciate this because it's just a beautiful thing to see, to watch it grow.
Oh, well, see, now that's something that we all need. Are you planning ever to do anything in Atlanta?
In Atlanta, I haven't been thought about my travels as of yet, but definitely I do have one of my business partners who works out of Atlanta, so definitely it's on the map.
This is what I would like to know, because you have a lot of people who want to probably blog. How would they even probably get started on doing that?
Well, starting a blog is very easy. There's places like WordPress and Google that have their own blogs that you can start up for free, and there are also paid features which you don't have to use right away. And once you get started with the blog and once you establish in a topic, because a blog, you have to have a purpose. You just can't start writing a blog, like, you know, I'm going to write about this day and write about something else one day. As long as it's consistent and has cohesion and you can marry the day-to-day topics or weekly topics together, then you're fine. And then the next step is you have to start building an audience. And then once you build that audience, you get to have feedback and get to tweak the blog a little bit and get a feel for what they want as well as yourself.
And I think that most people can do things like that, because just like you did your blog, you wrote about your everyday life experiences, and then it ended up turning into a book. But I think if people really just, to me, when you're blogging, you just find that interpersonal connection with yourself, what makes you happy, because I find that tends to be the thing with most bloggers. You just find that passion, because you never know. You might be like, Hillis, just have your own book created while she even thinking about it one day.
And that's exactly why I created the book, because of the positive feedback and love from my friends, from my family, and even strangers who said, you really have to turn this into a book. You really have to explore other options, because this is amazing. Other people have to hear about what it is that you're doing, what it is that you write. So blogging is definitely the first step. And next step, who knows? It could be a radio show. It could be a talk show on TV. It could be a book. Who knows what the possibilities are?
Exactly. But do you see a global shift in esoteric writing, if I say that correctly?
Yes, esoteric writing is definitely becoming widespread because of the exposure that's getting from people on the radio, from the books that are being written now, because we are raising a shift and the conscious awareness, you know, of the universe, of God, of those who believe in higher beings and entities.
And, you know, your book is, come to think of, your book is just so helpful, and the feedback that you got on it, I mean, it's just so insightful to know other people have been helped just by reading this one book. How does that make you actually feel, though?
It makes me feel joyful, and at times it brings a tear to my eye, because it's this one entry, I can't recall the entry that I wrote a few years back. And this lady, she was suicidal, and the blog that I posted that day really helped change her life. She said, you know, thank you so much for writing yesterday. This really helped me to rethink my life. It really helped me to be more aware of what was going on, and just really brought tears to my eyes. I couldn't believe that my words had such an impact on someone's life in that day, in that moment. I was like, oh my goodness, this really does help. It really does matter for other people.
Yeah, because that's how I feel with doing my radio show. The followers and listeners that I get, I feel very grateful that they are motivated off what I'm actually doing. And it only takes just a few. I mean, because I had one guy, he, like I told my other guests, he would not be on my show because, of course, I didn't have 5,000 listeners. And I was like, you know what, that's just so shallow that you take it like that. Because we all have to start somewhere to get to where we want to get to. And I was like, that's fine. I'm thankful for the bit of listeners that I do get, whether it be 100, it makes a big difference to me. And if that's how you feel, that you need 5,000 people to follow you, then you go right ahead then. Because that's how I see it. Yeah. Like, he felt, because that's how I saw him as, you need so it takes you to have 5,000 people to make your point across, so you don't feel powerful with 200. Then obviously you're not a powerful speaker. Because I don't think it took Jesus Christ to have to speak to a bunch of people to make himself powerful. So,
no, all it takes is one. If you have an audience of one person, and if you can change their life just from a few sentences you speak, then you've done your job.
Thank you. Thank you so much for saying that, Hillis. You have done your part. That's all it takes. Just one person. Just one person to listen, to pass on that word. Then you have done what you had to do. Exactly. But 5,000, like really? You need 5,000 people to listen to you? Oh, that's just so sad. That's a sad life then. Sad life. I don't need that many people. I mean, if I get that audience amount, then that's cool. But if I don't, then, hey, I'm not going to cry about it. But I said, when I do get it, I'm going to actually email him. Yes, I am. I'm going to email him to let him know I made it to that 5,000 count. But I don't want you on my show. No, because if you turn me down. And you never know. And that's the thing, too, about overlooking the small things, because you never know who might come, who you might need or come back to your door knocking. You don't turn people down just because they don't fit your category or they're not in the same place with you. You give them a chance first.
Exactly. You give everyone the same opportunity, whether if you feel that a past experience has turned you off from helping someone else, because if that was the case for me, I wouldn't have helped that lady buy lunch that day, because one day I was going to work and I was on my lunch break and had to go pick up some items, and it was this elderly lady standing on the corner saying, can you please help me, can you please help me, you know, my purse was robbed and I don't know what to do. They had my social security check was in there. So she's giving me all these reasons why I should help her. I said, sure, you know, I can give you a few bucks, you know, it's no big deal. And so the next day, I go back to pick up my items, some items that I had to have repaired, and I see the same lady corner saying the same story to someone else. I'm like, really? Is she really scamming everybody here on this busy corner every single day? So if it wasn't for me to let that go, but it wasn't up to me to judge her what it is that she was going to do with the money or how she got it. That was, I had nothing to do with that. It was the fact that I was able to help her regardless of how I felt and how I judged her situation. Because you don't know
yeah.
what people need or how they need it.
You don't. You don't ever know what they need it for. And sometimes we turn down those kinds of people because we're thinking, oh, they're going to go spend on drugs, booze, or whatever, but you don't know these same people have been in the boat that you're in. They've been on that party ride. They have had houses and cars, but sometimes one slip can cause you to be outside. And as I always tell my daughters, you be thankful for what you have, because they're 8 right now. And I catch them, oh, but Mommy, we need a new house. We need a new bedroom. And I will actually tell them, because they're very destructible. And I love them. Mm-hmm. I got them quiet right now. I have to threaten them while I'm doing my radio show. I will tell them, you can't get something new if you're not treating what you already have right. If you're in the room tearing it up, you're destroying it. Every time I put something in the room, how do you expect me to get you something new? How will you treat a new house? Are you going to put holes in the walls like you're doing the old house? Because that's not going to work. You cut up your clothes working. You know, and I know they're right now at that age where they kind of like, okay, I don't know what you're talking about, but I have to explain to them in their language. You not getting nothing new till you do right with the old stuff.
Yeah, it sounds like my grandmother. Because I know my grandmother, she used to, because when I was younger, she was, you know, retired. And my cousin and I would come home from school, and she would fix fried bologna sandwiches. And she said, your guys can't do anything or eat until you get out of your school clothes. You know, went to Catholic school, you know, had our uniforms. So you go put on your play clothes and you guys come in and do whatever they were going to do, because we couldn't make a move until we got out of our clothes.
Yes. And, I mean, it just, yeah, it goes back to grandmother time. You just have to, they have to understand. And they don't. So I hope one day when my girls get older, they understand, okay, that's why Mommy didn't do this. Not because I don't want you to have it, but I do want you to appreciate things. And see how that all falls back upon it, appreciating the small things. Because I'm not going to buy you no iPad. No. And you're going
right,
to tear it
exactly.
up.
Exactly. Yeah. It's all about taking those small moments. And children can learn this as well, taking those small moments. And just by watching their parents and say, thank you. Thank you, Mom. Thank you, Dad. Or even us appreciating others and validating that we do appreciate them for what they've done for us.
And see, that's like I said, it goes back to your book. Your book, it provides those insightful messages to our daily lives. And Ooh, I don't know if we just sit down and do we actually count those countless things to be for, but that's what we need to actually start doing, remembering those things.
Yes, but, absolutely.
Yes. Gillis, do you have any advice for the ones out there who may be having trouble getting in touch with their spiritual side? Because I know sometimes that's hard for people to actually get into.
My advice for people wanting to tap into their spiritual side, their spiritual self, definitely would start off with small moments of meditation, having quiet moments, whether it be in the shower or right before you wake up or right before you go to bed, even if it's, you know, 1 minute, 2 minutes, 15 minutes, whatever you feel you can do in your day to say thank you and open yourself up to receiving the guidance that you want for a situation. And it could be even a prayerful meditation saying, you know, I would like to be open to receiving X, Y, and Z, you know, whatever situation you're going through, because with the meditation, it makes the process of the situation you're going through easier, and you can go through it with grace and with dignity.
Well, those are some very insightful tips, and I do appreciate it. Gillis, are there any, wait a minute, is this the only volume that you have, or are there other volumes after this book?
Presently, thank you, because the volume one is the one that's in print now. However, there will be at least two more volumes to follow. It could be three.
Yes. Okay. Well, I hope to actually get one of those copies, all of them, because it's very inspirational, and we need that in our lives. I know that we sit around. Yes, we do have to work. We have so much on our plate. But to me, stress and strain of constantly being connected can sometimes take your life and your well-being off course. And we do. As they would say, you need a GPS for the soul. It can help you find yourself, and that's what we need. We need to have a GPS. We got to get back on course. We get off track. Like I said, I know we work. We stay busy. We have the kids. We have school to worry about. You have your job. 13 or more hours, but we got to find time to take out for ourselves to get back into the spiritual world, including me too. I need to take out the time to do that as well, because you can lose it. You can lose your mind when it's not together. But Hillis, I just wanted to say, man, I thank you for being on this show and sharing that insight. I love things like this where it's always giving us hope and light to things that leads to God. Well, Ben, I love it. I love all my guests who does that.
Well, thank you so much for having me on your show today. Thank you so much.
Oh, you are so welcome, Hillis, and you have a blessed one. We got to stay in touch with each other. I don't want to lose contact just because we do this show. No, I'm always going to try to make sure I stay in contact with my guests.
Yes, definitely, you will.
Well, Hillis, thank you again, and you have a blessed one, you and your family.
You as well. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome. Well, my loved ones, I do appreciate you for tuning in. I know I had a couple of guests that logged in the chat room, but logged out. But I do thank you for even tuning in. I thank everyone who emailed me today. That means so much. And as Hillis said, the small things matters. That's what's important in our lives, the small things. Tomorrow on the show, I will be talking with Robert Shane. He is the author of Secrets in a Time of Peace. He will be talking about the nuclear war, weapons, and all that stuff. Sounds like it's way over my head, but we will be getting detailed on that. And also, I want you to make sure that you support the fund that I talked about earlier on the T-shirts, because we need to make sure that we do that. This is called Booster. It's on booster.com/ChooseLifeScholarship. Help Dr. Tisha make a difference. Purchase a shirt today. Your support is needed to raise funds for the 4th Annual Choose Life Scholarship Fund. The Choose Life Scholarship is designed to provide financial support to assist teen parents accomplish their goals and dreams of pursuing higher education. The goal is to raise $10,000. Show your support. Purchase your shirt today. Please contact the organizer with any question. And all funds raised will go to Letitia Woodley, the organizer for Chooser Life Scholarship. And of course, it's 27 more days to go. The shirt goal is 50. It's $20 if you buy it now, and the shirts will deliver about 2 weeks after closing. So please make sure we do that. And of course, on the site, if you want to know more about this campaign, there's information on that. It's on Facebook. So please go ahead and support today. It makes a difference to help someone out, recognizing the small things. But I really do appreciate you for tuning in and listening. And I'm sorry that I didn't get time to chat with my guests. You came on, you came off, but that's all right. Hopefully I'll keep you on the next time. But I do appreciate you for staying tuned for this long with me. And I will see you tomorrow. I do love you, and God bless.
Thank you for tuning in to The Bright Side with Tanisha.
Come back daily from 12 p.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern.
God bless.